Chapter 2 of Green Grey Homestead by Steele Rudd. This legamous recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. You'll be 3 years on the little grey homestead, working hard and becoming well known and respected. You'll receive kindly hand turns from one and another, and be known to them all as Dick Gall. At the township, your neighbours, when they call for their mail, will ask if there's anything for Dick Gall, and take back goods for you from the store. But you'll have a couple of years to go yet before getting your deeds and little homestead is your own and you're properly settled. And you won't be properly settled till you get the right kind of woman for a wife to look after you. You're battling along all right, though, one way and another, going your hardest from the rising of the sun unto the going down of the same. And most of the old homesteaders around, careful of overwork themselves, will appraise you favourably, and reckon you're a goer, and admit you're knocking your place into shape pretty well. You'll get tired of it, though, sometimes. Cooking and sweeping, and washing and chambermaiding weren't in the picture when you took up the holding, and after a year or two it begins to get pretty lonesome away back there by yourself, and no one but the dog and cat, who are not always on friendly terms, to pass the time with. Still, there are hours when it's far from lonesome, nights when there's a dry storm on, and the lightning is superb, making flicker screens of the walls, and darting down the chimney and out the door, and the thunder cracking and bursting so close and continuous that your heart troubles you, and the cat gets panic and scoots about as if it was scalded, rushing into your bedroom and planting under your bunk, and rushing out again when the next crack comes, and the house rocks like a wooden horse, to surrender near the fire, waiting its doom with its back up and fur ruffled. Jerusalem, the electricity flashing round is like the fire that went out from the Lord and devoured Nadab and Eliu, the two meddling fool sons of Aaron. And all the bombarding will make you feel the heaven over your head has turned to brass and sulphur, and the Lord in his wrath is making powder and dust of the little grey homestead. Gee, you'll think of flying out the door, then fleeing seven different ways to escape destruction. But remembering the long arm of the Lord, you'll prefer being struck dead in your own home to rolling over outside in the dark, and in some hole, perhaps, where you'd never be found, and your carcass become as meat unto the native dogs and all the fowls of the air. But after a while, a terrible while it will seem to you and the cat, the storm starts to die instead, and to get out of range, and the flicker screen fades out too. Your heart will stop kettle-drumming, and so opening the door which you closed when you found the lightning make a thoroughfare of the home, an inch or two, you'll squint out into the night. Seeing a window somewhere in the sky, with a star shining in it, you'll know the Lord isn't going to destroy the earth yet a while, or smite you in the knees, or on the legs, or make you and your little homestead a proverb or a byword. Opening a little wider, you'll begin talking to the dog again. "It's all over, I reckon, Rover," you'll say. "But it was pretty rough while it lasted, eh, old chap?" And Rover, who was snorting all through the disturbance, you having thrown him a shoulder of mutton that went unhealthy on you during the day, will open his eyes and look up at you in sympathy, and without shifting his head. His head is between his paws, which are protruding on either side of his nose like two splints with nails in them. Looking out again, you'll see the storm had begun an offensive against the new settlement way over on Washpool Plain, where a community of migrants are settled for life. You'll get a new feeling then. You'll laugh, and give it to Rover as your opinion that those chums over there will be under their beds saying their prayers, and wishing they had hold of the good Bishop of London, or whoever it was, lured them into a life of velvety days and pale peaceful nights of a new land. But in the daytime your neighbours, the McLevertys and the Ryans and the Moriartys and the rest, will remember you in your hours of melancholy, and will want to care for you and make your life brighter, especially those of them who have marriageable daughters, and they'll all have a few over 27 anyway. Most homestead mothers feel it's hard for a single man, when he comes in at the end of a long day, to have to prepare his own supper, and they reckon a place gets dull and uninhabitable without the touch of a woman's hand, and that a man does too if he's a bachelor. So, after talking it over among themselves, and wondering how you might take it, Mrs. Ryan, one day when you happen to be at their place having a cup of tea, will offer to go over one of the girls one morning and scrub the place out for you, and if you have any shirts and collars and things you'd like washed and ironed, they'll be glad to laundry them along with their own. Also, if you have any currants or raisins and a few fresh eggs over there, they'll bake you enough cakes to do you the whole of the week, and it won't be any trouble to them. You're not prepared for anything like that, for it will mean their seeing the inside of you and knowing how you live. And while they all wait for you to say what you think, you'll blush and grin, and shake your head and get self-conscious, and you'll tell them you're used to doing it, and don't mind at all, that you prefer doing it. And while you're lying, you'll reach for your hat, so as to get away before they can press you any further. But you want to show them you're grateful, so you'll pull your hat on at the door, and tell Mrs. Ryan that you reckon she and the girls have enough to do in their own place, without thinking about yours. Then old Tim Ryan himself will rise up, smiling placidly, and placing his big hand on your shoulder, will look down into your face and tell you, "Not at all, Dick, not at all. And divil the bit of bother will it be to them. Sure, it's nothing. Just look at them, as big and strong as cattle, all excepting little Katie, perhaps." And old Tim, who has more whiskers than wealth, and, taken lengthways, is the biggest man in the district, will shake you in a burst of friendship till you are compelled to stiffen the joints of your neck to hold your head on. A well-wishing neighbour old Tim is, and ever ready to help with the services of the family, and the cheerful, dignified spirit he does it in is a pleasant feature. "I won't want anything done, not for a while," you'll kind of choke. Then off you'll go, blasting old Tim, and wishing you hadn't gone near him to help load his pigs at all. That evening, though, when you finish supper, you'll start on the veranda and house with a long-handled shovel, cleaning away the mud. Then you'll get down on your knees inside and do some scrubbing. And before you go to bed, which will be late, everything in the little homestead, in case of surprises, will be clean and healthy and in apple-pie order. End of chapter 2.